And I'm no expert on hypermobility. All I'm going to do is talk from my experience, the research I've read, and so on. And really, there's three main areas of research I'm going to be pulling for you, and I will give you the links to this. One of them is by a fabulous guy called Alan G. Pockinca, I think is how you'd say it. And it's a really great sort of 19-page research article he wrote, which is written in very nice language, and I will give you the link to that because it's an excellent article to read. And the other main piece I'm going to pull from is an amazing article that only came out this week that the fabulous Bethany Lucas sent to me because she knew we were doing this. And it's from the elasdanos.org, I think their website is, but it's their support group, and they send out a biannually magazine, and in it was a fabulous article by Sally Jones on hypermobility and Pilates, which is fantastic. So there's, if you go onto the, and I'll spell it for you, EHLERS-DANLOS, which is a condition we're going to talk about, DANLOS, Support UK. They've got lots of nice information on there. And as I say, you know, Bethany sent me this fabulous article through, which I'm sort of going to pull from those two. And within the article, she spoke about Jessica Eccles, who's obviously somebody who does a lot of research into hypermobility. So I'm going to sort of pull from those three sources as we talk about things this evening. So as I say, please ask any questions you want. Post any of the questions in the chat box, and yeah, I'll sort of work my way through the whole thing, because I think hypermobility is really, really incredibly interesting but incredibly difficult to work with. I'd much in a way rather work with a very inflexible body than a body which is hypermobile, because it's really, really tricky for many reasons. And I think what's amazing is so many people come to our classes in order to improve their flexibility and mobility, that often it's a really tricky goal for people to attain. And then we have the odd few people who are incredibly flexible, incredibly bendy, and they actually have to fight just to hold themselves in place. So while we sort of see flexibility as something that's highly desirable and will give us less pain and less postural issues and so on, hypermobility itself can create incredible issues. And hypermobility describes joints that can move beyond a normal range of movement. So in our classes, we might see clients that their knees lock back, their elbows lock back, their spine seem to bend in half, like the image that I used for this webinar. You know, shoulders seem to, you know, can dislocate very easily. And joint hypermobility syndrome affects approximately 3 in 10 people in the UK. So it's quite a common occurrence. And women are 3 times more likely to be affected by men, which is, you know, we often see that in our classes. You know, it's typically women that seem a lot more bendy, a lot more flexible. So, you know, things like double jointed, people say, oh, I'm double jointed and so on. So the sort of medical term for joints that move too far is hypermobility. And the word for joints that are too loose, too easily movable, is laxity. Okay, so the majority of hypermobile people have no problems at all. They don't develop problems. But there are a select few that suffer from chronic pain and other symptoms. And those that suffer from that pain, and where it causes the looseness within their joints, causes other issues, chronic pain and other symptoms, that's known as our joint hypermobility syndrome. So I sort of think when, you know, some people walk into class and say, oh, I'm hypermobile, but actually they can live with that. They can function well with that. They just can move in a larger range of movement. And then we have that 3 out of 10 that actually it manifests in other ways. It causes them chronic joint pain and other symptoms. And it's I think this is where hypermobility syndrome is incredibly, it's it's very, very, it really affects people because they're often seen as being hypochondriacs or very lazy, because they will tend to avoid doing things because it causes them pain. And they don't look sick, you know, they don't look ill, they don't seem to, you know, move in any way differently. And yet they just, you know, they can end up being treated with a lot less sympathy than somebody who's walking very stiffly. And I think often because when they go to GPs and so on, it's so hard to diagnose and find out, you know, because it's at the complexity. It can often lead to the hypermobile feeling, you know, quite anxious, quite depressed, because they just feel as though nobody's believing them. So it can be a really serious, you know, condition, which can deeply affect people. So I wanted to talk about, you know, the things that can be affected with joint mobility syndrome. So obviously most often, simply from its name, muscles and joints are affected. And you can often get stiffness though in other larger joints. So, you know, things like the shoulders, the neck and the back, you can tend, where you're hypermobile in some areas, other areas will stiffen in order to compensate. And what's hard is the pain, the chronic pain that hypermobile people can suffer from, it doesn't show up in x-rays because it's in the muscles and the tendons around the joint rather than actually something physically wrong with the joint. So they'll also suffer a lot of a huge other group of other conditions, not just joint problems, because of the excessive stretchiness they have in bodily tissues. So, you know, you'll think, so obviously you've got joint and back pain, but you'll also get, you know, different areas that really are affected because of this looseness in the tissues of the body. You can read more about the testing of hypermobility, and it's done really through two scores, the Brighton score and the Bainton score. I hope I said that right, Bainton score. So there's two sort of ways. The Brighton score, they're both used by you know, medical professionals to test the degree of hypermobility. And I, you know, within the article I'm going to send to you, it does outline that. Something which I think, Rose, you've come across is, and I hope I say this right, Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. And there's quite a lot of debate on its link to hypermobility and how it's classified and so on. And some people believe that joint hypermobility syndrome is the same thing as the hypermobile type of this Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. Because I hope I'm saying it right. If I just say now EDS, I hope everybody forgives me. But this condition is caused by extreme elasticity in the body tissues, okay? So what you often have is somebody's diagnosed with EDS, they'll often have very soft, velvety skin, almost. Their skin is very, very loose because it's not just the joints that are affected, but it's actually elasticity in all the bodily tissues. For some people, it's the split between the two conditions is not important because the treatments are very similar. So from our point of view, you can just sort of umbrella it if you wish. I mean, obviously, if you do want to go in deeper, fine, but you can umbrella it into hypermobility, okay? I mean, the treatments, as I say, are the same. You would train them the same. But obviously, if somebody's severely affected by EDH, then, you know, they can be in braces, they can require surgery, they can get loss of feeling in legs and so on. And that is obviously much more specialised, extreme, severe cases. So you've got sort of like a really broad spectrum of hypermobility. You know, you've got people who are just very flexible. You've then almost got a middle category where people do suffer with chronic pain and they come to us to Pilates in order to improve their stability. And then you've sort of like got this further category where you've got the EDS coming in. So if I sort of take the different conditions and sort of the different symptoms that can appear and manifest themselves with hypermobility, and we can just sort of chat through them. So first of all, we've got the obvious one of the joint pain and the muscle strains that we find. So as we've sort of said, you know, you've got these loose joints that will put increased strain on the nearby soft tissues that surround the joints, so the muscles, the ligaments, the tendons. And often, as I've said, because hypermobility doesn't just affect the joints, it can be the bodily tissues, they can also be overlax as well. And so because of this increased laxity around the whole area, you get this, you know, very much an increased strain. So they can be very much prone to wear and tear, to tearing, to spasm. And this then creates, adversely, a stiffness around the joints and pain. And so where you sort of like got this laxity, because of the damage that's being caused, you will then find a stiffness, which is why sometimes hypermobiles want to stretch. You know, they sort of feel a sense of they want to stretch. Because of the role in stabilising the trunk, the head and the neck and the lower back are also very often affected by in hypermobiles. Chronic neck strain, according to... from the main article I'm going to send you, if I'm really, really rude and call him Alan. You know, he says that chronic neck strain will affect almost every client that has joint hypermobility syndrome for two things. He says, first of all, the ligaments that's supposed to support the head are too loose, so don't do it too well. So the muscles of the neck are forced to do more work than they're meant to do, so they become strained. And he's also saying that secondly as well, is that the shoulders are too loose, and so that's, you know, the ball and socket isn't held tight enough in the joint. And because of this looseness, any movement with the arms and so on will give added strain. So you've got the neck muscles having to support not only the head, but also the shoulder girdle. So this whole area here just becomes incredibly strained, fatigued, and completely overworked. And what you'll often find is that because it has happened gradually over a long time for hypermobiles, you know, throughout their life, they don't actually realise that they are so tight and locked there. And often that you can just touch them, they're like, oh, that's really tight, I didn't realise it was so tight, because the process is so gradual for them because it's happened over their whole life. You know, and their necks just end up like a knotted mass. And again, it's almost the same for the low back. It's sort of reflected in the low back, in that, you know, the ligaments that should be supporting and stabilizing the spine and the pelvis are just far too loose. And so therefore, this will put strain on that whole ligament and that whole area. And then obviously we've got the hips, the same as the shoulders, not being held and supported well enough while we're walking. So suddenly we've got that extra strain working. So those two areas, the neck and the low back, are often areas that we really need to focus on, but in the correct way, which is what we're going to come on to a little bit later. With joint hypermobility syndrome, you often have disc issues because obviously, you know, our discs are soft tissue again. And what happens is, you know, they're there to cushion and support the spine. But again, what we've got is that they're less rigid than they should be. They're softer. So therefore, they're much more prone to leaking, to rupture, you know. And so, you know, that's where we've got all the disc issues that, you know, you might, you know, you just see a higher level of it. And obviously we've got it, you know, from, you know, if we've got disc issues in the neck, then that's going to radiate down through the arms, disc issues in the low back, it's going to affect the legs and so on. So that's often an area that can be highly affected. And then they can also develop from that neuropathic pain, sorry. So that's where you get your tingling, your burning, stinging, you know, again, radiating down. And again, it's caused by these softer discs, which are just, you know, much more prone to that rupturing and that leaking. simply due to the joints not being held correctly, osteoarthritis often occurs much more rapidly in the neck, in the low back, and that can often be a frequent cause of pain for hypermobile clients. So things like tendinitis, all those things that are associated with wear and tear and inflammation of the joints often affect our hypermobile clients much more. There's also an association between hypermobility and increased risk of osteoporosis. And they're not sure if it's because of simply because hypermobiles don't move as much because it's painful. So therefore their sort of bone impact and their weight bearing is affected more. But also they don't know if it's more hormonal. So that is an association that's there as well. So I will talk in a moment about what we can do from Pilates, obviously. I mean, Pilates is the perfect system to use to help the alignment of joints. But I will go into more detail about exactly how I think we should cue our Pilates and cater for the hypermobile client a little bit more. Fibromyalgia, I think, is something which is a really, really tricky condition that we find, and it's a very common diagnosis in people with joint hypermobility syndrome, because what you have is obviously when the muscles around these loose joints become strained and painful in everyday use, they become more and more painful, and this chronic unrelenting pain, this constant pain, begins to disrupt sleep and causes fatigue and depression. And that cycle of not being able to sleep, getting tired, pain, depression, is often a real sort of vortex for fibromyalgia. Often you'll find that your hypermobiles, they are predisposed to develop, chronic fatigue syndrome, which again has a lot of commonalities with fibromyalgia. So then, because it's not just in the... Is everybody still okay? Does anybody have any questions so far? Because I'm just sort of reeling off, As I say, I'm very much pulling from this article because it's simply the best article that just encapsulates anything. Felicity, have you got a question?
Yes, sorry, and it was right back to the beginning, actually.
Go on, yeah?
You said that approximately 3 out of 10 people are affected by hypermobility.
Yeah.
And then later on we talked about HMS, and that was 3 out of 10. But is actually it 3 out of 10 people are affected by HMS, or that a third of hypermobiles have the full syndrome where they have excessive pain?
No, when I talk about... no, I know what you mean. So when I talk about joint hypermobility syndrome, it's those that are suffering from some form of chronic symptom.
I understand that.
Sorry.
The question was around how many people are affected.
3 out of 10.
Okay. Are affected by the syndrome.
Yes. Yes. So I actually think if you think of your classes, and I don't know if it's really tricky because I don't know if it's because Pilates, people who are flexible love Pilates because they can do it. That sounds awful. But you know what I mean? They're very successful at yoga and Pilates. And yes, it does promote flexibility, but I think it's the sort of type of exercise that if you are flexible, you love it. So it's really hard because I do think we have, if you think about your classes, a lot of people in them are very flexible. Do you know what I mean? You have the odd one or two people, but it's really interesting because I was thinking about this today. I was training actually my tennis coach today, who we do a little swap with, and he sees himself as not being flexible. He says, I'm very stiff. But he took a pole and went right overhead and all the way back. He can bend and touch his toes, but because he feels tightness, he sees himself as not flexible. So because his hamstrings are so flexible, he will bend and touch the floor. But his spine doesn't particularly move. So he has areas of tightness. But if you looked at him overall, he's incredibly flexible. And I think sometimes we all think, oh, I'm really tight in my hamstrings. But actually, the hamstrings aren't too bad. It could be more in the low back or... Do you know what I mean? Whereas, I don't know, what do you all think? If you think about your classes, do you think you've got a higher level, if I say higher level, of flexibility than maybe in other styles of classes or not? What does anybody think?
I think potentially yes, but I have HMS myself, so I think I spot it more in people. So often I will maybe not spot they have HMS if they haven't reported any pain as a result of it, but I will notice kind of hypermobile joints.
So, yeah.
You know, I think that probably, you know, more than 3 out of 10 people that I see have some form of hypermobility in a joint or another. So
yeah.
Tend to point it out to them.
Yeah. I mean, but I think that, you know, hypermobility, when I'm talking now is, what I've sort of gone on to is people who actually, you know, suffer with other symptoms. So as Rose says, definitely about 2/3 hypermobile and 1/3 crazily stiff. Yeah, especially your army boys, Rose. Yes, and I don't, as I say, I don't know if it's because Pilates just, people gravitate to it, you know, it's interesting. Does that answer your question? Sorry, I don't know if I did there, Felicity. Yeah, okay. The other thing that's interesting is that joint hypermobility syndrome runs in families. It's seen as an inherited genetic, and it's to do with the production of protein collagen found within your ligaments. And that's what weakens the connective tissues. So often, you know, it runs in families. Yeah, exactly, Cecilia. You know, you can look at people and you look at them locking out their elbows and spinning them round and you think there is a high level of mobility there. I mean, obviously we're not going to box people and judge people and so on, but that's exactly right. You know, and I think because people stiffen up, they don't think they're flexible because certain areas stiffen up. Which we'll come on to. So the next thing I just want to talk about is when your hypermobility manifests itself in the autonomic nervous system. So this is where, you know, your lax joints, it's often found that hypermobiles, if I call them that, hypermobiles, they appear to make extra adrenaline. And I think it's because they are having to work so much harder. All the systems on the body, because it's a bit looser. So the heart, the veins, the digestive tract, everything's that little bit looser. It's not got as much oomph, if I put it that way. It's not got as much oomph to get things moving and getting around the body. So what you find is your hypermobile body will work harder to be alive, so to breathe, to digest, to beat the heart, to circulate blood. So often they have to produce extra adrenaline. So often your hypermobiles will be very high energy, always on the go people. So you've sort of like got these two extremes, people who appear lazy or hypochondriacs, and then this other sort of this hyperactive type. But the problem is obviously if I'm producing extra adrenaline, when I become tired and fatigued, my body responds by creating more adrenaline. So you sort of don't realize how tired you are until suddenly you're just almost collapsing. And Felicity's nodding her head going, yeah. You know, you sort of just push through. You keep just pushing through, and then suddenly you're just shattered, or a cold will just floor you, or do you know what I mean? And it's really amazing, that sort of what the body does. And as well, you can, you know, hypermobiles are often characterized by being oversensitive to things, hypersensitive, and they sort of have an over an over response. I can't even look at you now, Felicity, in case you think I'm talking about you. But you have this, you know, you over respond to emotional stresses because you're in a heightened state as such. But what this can also do, it can lead to fluctuations of blood pressure, of heart rate. And as I've said, you know, you get digestive and respiratory problems. So, you know, what's quite hard is that, you know, a hypermobile will often be quite jittery and anxious and worry and just feel, you know, it can also then make even things, you know, even more drastic, and you get nauseous, lightheaded. You know, you sort of have this incredible sensitivity to light and things like that. So there's sort of that aspect of it. And, you know, as well, what's fascinating, and again, as I'm talking about this, you can probably think of clients or yourselves. Hypermobility, as I said, it does affect the heart and circulation. Because the body's not, the blood isn't circulating, it's pooling a little bit. So often hypermobiles will have really cold hands and feet. They'll have often low blood pressure or low to normal blood pressure. They can often get lightheaded when suddenly they stand up, and drops in blood pressure can very much, you know, trigger palpitations and, you know, the heart pounding and so on. So you know, and hypermobiles often suffer with headaches. People with lax joints, they have a very much a predisposition for migraines. They can be incredibly common simply because of fluctuation of the hormone levels and blood pressure, from the neck strain, and things like that. Often there's, as I've said, a huge issue with digestion. Because you haven't got you've got a looseness of the body's tissues. Things aren't moving through. They're not being pushed through, so you can often get or pushed down. So often you can get reflux. You can have, you know, obviously irritable bowel syndrome, and things like that. What's fascinating as well is going back to the adrenaline side, is often there can then be a huge issue with sleeping because you're so awake, you're so up there and at it. It can create a huge amount of anxiety. As I said, you've got this oversensitivity, hypermobiles often say, oh, you know, sometimes just burst into tears. I know I've overreacted. But again, it's these adrenaline highs and lows that your body's coping with. So even when you try to go to sleep, you've got this stimulating effect of the adrenaline not allowing you to. Or often, because of adrenaline, when you do fall asleep, it can be a very shallow sleep, lots of dreams, lots of, you know, disruptions within your sleep. And we all know that lack of sleep can just be, you know, awful. You know, it can affect so much. But again, hypermobiles don't realise how bad their sleep is, you know, because they're just used to it and just carry on. There's also issues with the reproductive system. Again, simply because the uterus can be quite weak, you know, and isn't, you know, there's risks with prolapses, and cystitis and so on. So you've got lots of issues that he talks about there, you know, in all the different areas. And I think that when I read that, it really opened my eyes as to, you know, because we just think but often hypermobility is just classed as, oh, great flexibility, very bendy, double jointed. But actually, when you look deeper, the effects on the body system is just incredible. And the article that Sally Jones wrote, she's a Pilates instructor, but also she suffers with joint hypermobility syndrome herself. And she, you know, talks about it being not just, you know, the fact that I can move my joints around a bigger range, but that it's multi-systemic, and, you know, it's a condition that affects all areas. And this is what I found fascinating in this article. And I will try and get hold of a physical copy of the article if I can, But she talks about, as I say, Jessica Eccles, which I'm going to look more into. And she was the first person who did neuroimaging of hypermobility in the brain. And she found that several areas of the brain on a hypermobile were substantially different than in somebody who wasn't hypermobile. She talks about how you could actually see that there's hypermobiles have an unusually reactive fight or flight fear response. So this is why, and you could see the development in the brain of that, and that's why they have higher levels of anxiety and panic and jitteriness. You know, they're living in a constant heightened state of fight or flight. They have very much a heightened awareness of internal body signals and hypersensitivity to pain. Or the threat of pain. So it's when you're working with somebody, they fear the movement. They fear that it's going to hurt them, whether it's the pain is actually real or perceived, that sensation of it's going to be painful is there. The area of the brain that is in charge of proprioception was seen as being diminished. So proprioception, balance, coordination, things like that are very much diminished in hypermobiles. So from our point of view as Pilates instructors, I think that we can do so much. So much just from those few things. I mean, we've got all the postural work we can do. We've got the stability, we've got the strength, the endurance. We can improve coordination, balance, proprioception. But this was the key in this article, and I loved the way she spoke about this. And she used, I'm going to use this now a lot, but what she said is for Pilates for hypermobiles, it's all about finding and maintaining internal resistance and resilience. And I just loved that. To me, that was amazing. Because we need our hypermobiles to work within their range. Okay. And that, to me, let me take that back a little bit. To me, with a hypermobile, there's two ranges. There's the range that they have, which is outside the normal range, okay, so their range, where they can still have stability. But then there's their wider range where they hang out, okay? So what you've got to think with a hypermobile is, in order to hold their stability with mobility, their body is working so hard, so hard to do that. So when they go outside of that to a really larger range, they can hang out there because their nervous system, their system switches off a bit because they're in that bigger range, no stability, but their body's sort of like, oh, I'm happy here because I'm just hanging here. Does that make sense? So it almost seems easier to hang out bigger and not focus on stability because they're not having to work so hard. I don't know if that makes sense to you, what I'm trying to get across there. Is that okay? Just nod at me those who, yeah, good. So you'll often see that there's an area where they seem to work so hard to hold, and then when they go to a greater range, flops out there, but suddenly I'm happy because they're not challenging their body's systems to hold themselves there. Pilates has a hugely calming effect, as we know, on the nervous system. So for with our hypermobile client, it's the importance of that breath, that calming, that just releasing tension is incredibly important, of just letting the body just calm down. And I think that's where often before we start working with hypermobiles, it's very important just to have that moment of just relax, just let yourself sink heavy. You're supported on the bed. You know, for me with hypermobiles, I wouldn't often start standing. I'd start with as much support and base under me as possible so I can feel that support and I can you know, be calm, because standing's hard work, kneeling's hard work. Do you know what I mean? Seated is hard work. Let yourself just be fully supported. So that would be where I would work from and progressively lessen the base of support and base of support, but, you know, do that. So if we're thinking but one of the things that I think is very interesting is where you feel stiffness and, you know, oh, I need to stretch this bit because it's tight, I can feel stiff then. I think that's because, you know, hypermobiles take a huge amount of energy just to hold themselves together, just to keep themselves in one space, which means that this nervous system is on that high alert, just to hold the joint in space. And what happens is this leads to the muscle spasming. And as we've said, that sort of stiffening to try and protect and stabilize. So then what you find is you get holding patterns which restrict movement. So it's where you've got, you know, the body's imbalances where you're holding so tightly with one area to help stabilize. And often it can be a superficial area. Do you know what I mean? It's the superficial. We need to go a little bit deeper. So almost what we need to do is help hypermobiles to release their holding patterns. Their, I don't want to move here because it's holding me. And actually very, very safely and calmly balance. So it's almost you need to look at releasing before mobilizing, if that makes sense. So if they do want that sort of, I need to stretch this area, it's not necessarily taking it into a stretch, it's just letting go. Does that make sense? And I think that, so when I talk about this internal resistance and resilience, I think it's where, for example, if I'm thinking of a one-leg circle, for example, I really want my hypermobile to think of how the connection of where my internal resistance is coming from, in order to, you know, with stability circle the leg. And that's where very much using small equipment, very much using the reformer, very much using something to push and pull can initially start the understanding of working with resistance. And okay, it starts off external. But imagine if I give you another example. Let me think of the roll-up, for example. So my hypermobile could very easily do the roll-up and just sort of flop down, flop back up potentially. But what I need to do is have a real sense of strength within the roll-up. So I might start off with a very strong band around the feet or me holding a towel. And that real sense of the two-way work going on that, as they've really got to focus on reaching. So imagine I'm seated and I'm training them and I'm holding a towel, they're holding onto it. So as they let the navel draw back, they're very much drawing, using the navel to pull back, using the feet to push forwards, to very much get a strong internal resistance. Do you know what I mean? So they feel the strength within them. They're not just allowing the body to fall or just to hang out. They've got to actively move themselves. And let me give you another example. Let me just think. What could I give you? Throw me a move. Any move. Is anybody going to give me a move? Shoulder ridge. I was waiting for shoulder ridge. Perfect. So, you know, shoulder ridge is great anyway because it is a closed kinetic chain. Okay. So what you're looking at again, if I go back, you would start. So ideally, first of all, you could start using small equipment. So if we take, I'm going to come back to shoulder ridge. If we take Helen's sidekick, you know, we can think of the sidekick as, you know, really focusing on the length through the spine. So we really want the stability to come through the torso with the moving leg. So I would very much do that against a wall, okay? So, or against a foam roller that I'm holding. And they've really got to work on keeping the spine along the foam roller as they are kicking forwards and back. So you've almost got an anti resistance going on there. As the leg's coming forwards, that tailbone has really got to work at staying connected onto the roller. Does that make sense? This is, again, if I go back to what I know I've spoken about before, but open and closed kinetic chain exercises. So your sidekick is an open chain kinetic exercise, which means that, you know, the leg is moving, there's nothing controlling it, it's freely moving, and that's what makes it almost harder. Whereas your shoulder bridge, because all points are connected, it's a closed kinetic chain. So almost your side kick would be of a higher level than your shoulder bridge to a hypermobile. Because when I'm doing shoulder bridge, those points are pushing into something solid. So I'm gonna have much more feedback into the hips, into the knees, into the shoulders. The joints are going to be much more stable because I'm going to have much more recruitment going on. I'm going to feel much safer in space. And this is where using things like the reformer is great for hypermobiles, because they've got something to push and pull against, to draw away from. And that's what you've got to reflect in your mat work if you don't have the equipment. So your side kick, that's what I mean, you put them against a foam roller. Swimming on all fours is ridiculous for most people anyway. And for a hypermobile can be horrific because all you've got are your hands and your knees, really, is and lower limb as your points of reference. So that would be an incredibly advanced move, Cecilia. That's a tricky one, because I love about the on all fours position is to be able to train my neck correctly in that position. I'm going to turn it on its head for that. So holding your neck on, so having yourself on all fours and working into the deep neck flexors is superb. So I'd like it for that, but I think if you then go and lift one point off, you're creating a really unstable base, which is hard. So maybe that could be your end game. Because how could you improve their stability there? Do you know what I mean? It's a move that in itself, what could you do to give it stability? Do you know what, does that make sense? Because you've only got, you know, three tiny points. So Rose was shown a lovely on all fours where they sit super slow back, then return. Trying to keep the spine and pelvis stable and not change position. Yeah, that's a really nice one. So that's almost like, Rose, I call that my flat cat. Because your spine sort of doesn't change, but you're almost doing a bit of a cat movement. But it is really, really difficult. And again, they can't feel it because there's no feedback. You know, you've not got anything under the torso or the spine to give feedback. The only thing, again, you could do is maybe put a pole along the side of the body running from the shoulder down through to the hips and say you've got to keep along that pole. But it is a very, very tricky one to do. Props definitely help. And that's where I think you need to add those props to give the feedback, to give external resistance, and then begin to change it to internal resistance. So once I have, if I go back to the side kick one, once they can keep, so when I've got the foam roller along their spine, once I can keep, they can keep their tailbone on the foam roller while the legs are swimming, going forwards and back, take the foam roller away and see if they can have a sense of, as the leg kicks forwards, they've got to almost tilt back slightly with the tailbone to resist that movement, create that internal resistance and resilience. And as the leg goes back, they've actually almost got to tuck under slightly to do that. So Rose has gone back there and she's saying one-to-one, it can be great doing that flat cat. To put your palm between the shoulder blades and forearm down the spine. Yeah, exactly. So that's exactly the same as like using a pole. Brilliant, brilliant, really, really nice. But again, it's giving that feedback, which needs to be so important. And I think it's, you know, it's one of those things where we need to be very sympathetic, you know, just because you know, they look healthy and seem to move amazingly and fling themselves into a rollover and a roll up very easy. It's hard. It's a difficult condition, I think. With what we've seen, it's multi-systemic. It affects absolutely everything. And I think we've always got to keep in mind this very broad spectrum that it can go along. But I think Pilates is just amazing because it kicks into the physical side, the issues that they have, and also the deeper psychological issues that are there. And we know that Pilates can help sleep and can help, you know, all those aspects that can just really help somebody who is hypermobile. Any other question? Anything else you want to talk about with that? You can unmute yourselves now if you like.
Well, it can often be fairly controversial on the breathing, but could we look at that a little bit more?
About the breathing, Rose?
Yeah.
In what way? Tell me what you think.
Because I've noticed with my hypermobile ladies, and particularly the Ehlers-Danlos lady, that a lot more so than anyone else I teach, they hold their breath, and when they breathe, they tend to shallow breathe through their upper chest. And I'm forever, throughout the class, sort of every minute or two, saying, I'm breathing deeply,
yeah,
because you'll hear all of them go, okay,
yeah,
because
yeah,
they stop breathing, and as soon as I get them breathing, they start to move more smoothly. But it's how I struggle with that. They never get better.
So yeah, so
I'm really not doing it enough.
Yeah, well, no, this is where, Rose, you've got several options. Did I ever do the singing roll up with you?
Yes, it was brilliant.
Right. So what you need to do is you need to make them breathe noisily. I don't often say this because I'm not a fan of percussive breathing, but this is where it's got its place. So what you could do, Rose, is say to them, you know, I want to hear you breathe, and get them. And there's a couple of things with this. So say Romana, for example, one of the elders, Romana, I think it's her, and people I've worked with that have been trained by her, Kathy Nash will say, you know, it's breathe in through the nose and breathe out through the nose. Your mouth is made for kissing. So they will sort of, you know, they say very much you breathe in and you breathe out. So what you could do is you could maybe say to them, we're going to have a theme, whatever you want, over the next couple of weeks of, I want to hear you, or if you want to do it through the mouth, just like a breath. So, you know, normally we say we don't want to hear you breathe, but I think for you and what you've got here, especially in certain moves, you need to hear the breath. So say, you know, I would start saying, I want you to breathe in and do it with them and breathe almost noisily and say, I want you to breathe out. So use a soft breath so you're not tensing through the jaw. So it's more of a ha. But what do you think of that, Rose? Because I think you need to hear them breathe. Because what happens is that as you say, people stop breathing and they shallowly breathe. And you end up saying, now breathe. But then it makes them shock and forget what they were supposed to be doing. It's like, oh, damn, I forgot to breathe. So instead of, so what you might do is reduce cueing other stuff. I don't like, as Rose, you said you may have to give them some mints at the start. I know I always worry about breath when I'm breathing out through my mouth. But you may want to almost reduce the cueing that you do of other stuff just for a couple of weeks. And I think in the associates, Rose, I've got a small class on cueing just by breath. So let me send that to you, Rose. And it's where I've done quite a few moves and I haven't cued anything apart from breath. And they'll still do the moves well. But what I suggest that you do is you really think of that and just see if you can really get them. And even if you end up reducing, yes, even if you end up reducing the level of the movement, that you can, yeah, it is still on the group. Yes, shall I send it to all of you? you can bring, because almost that's a key thing that they need, you know, especially from the fight or flight, especially just everything, Rose. So do you know what I'd almost do is I would put to one side all the other things you're working on and just think, right, shoulder bridge, I just want you to breathe in, and you almost have to pause yourself and breathe in yourself. And then as you breathe out, I want you to just send the breath down the spine and allow it to lighten the spine into your bridge. Do you know what I mean? And just take away tilting the pelvis, lifting with the tailbone. Forget all that and just say to them, I want you to use the breath to go down the spine and lift it up. And they'll still do the bridge, and it may not be the articulation that you want, but what you're going to find is their breath will become even, because the problem that a lot, and this I think applies to so many people, hypermobiles or not, is they will tend to breathe in and then they'll breathe out and then they'll do the move, or their breath won't last for the whole move. That's why that whole singing roll up makes such a difference, because that's why percussive breathing, the sort of pursed lip breathing, is excellent, because it elongates the breath to suit the move and for the length of the move. So yeah, exactly, you're right, Felicity, they tend to move faster because they've got no breath left. So if you I think I did it in one of the instructor only classes recently, I got you lying on your back and you had to breathe in, take the arms over, and you had to make your in breath last the whole movement of your arms, and then your out breath came back and it had to last the whole movement of your arms. And then each time you did it, you had to try and make it a little bit longer. So you could almost take all of that and do that. So Becky just said she's got a client with asthma and her breathing so bad it's making her anxious. Yeah. So yeah, we need to think of those cues for that. Yeah, so again, Becky, that's what I would do. Say if you're doing just knee circles, one leg circles with a bent knee, just say to her, I want you to breathe in, and breathe out. And you're going to have to make it noisy. And I think that, you know, you just sort of say, I want you to keep... And you've got to, you want to say, I want to hear you breathe, 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 breathe. So if I were you, I would reduce the level... Get that going, you know, forget all the other bits and pieces that we bang on about. And then, you know, it really does work, because the success then you get with the moves is amazing, because the breath is aiding the movement, but also you're going to reduce this anxiety. And with a reduction in anxiety, they will become more safe in space and therefore move and stabilize better. Yeah, so definitely that's what I'd say. Forget the other cues. If anything, just say to yourself, do you know how we often have a theme in our classes or we're working towards something? Just think to yourself, I'm going to work towards a constant breath. Because we often talk about the move itself being non-stop, non-starting, but actually it should be the breath that makes that happen, that it's a constant breath through the move, not just a breathe in, breathe out, and then move. So yes, so that might help there. So I hope that helps, because I think, you know, the breath is key for this. And the other thing you can do, actually another key thing that I did on another workshop with somebody who was trained by one of the elders. She was amazing. She got you to breathe in. So say I was doing spine stretch. So you'd breathe in to elongate the spine, and then you'd breathe out and start breathing out. And as you felt the abdominals draw in as on that exhalation, that's when you moved. So she spoke about, I know the way she spoke about it. Imagine rings of a tree, you know, when you cut a tree and you've got the rings in the trunk. So she'd say you breathe in, and then imagine as you breathed out, you got to about your third ring, and then you started the movement as you carried on breathing out. That's a little bit more technical, but it seemed to... That really, really created a very strong place to move from, a very internal place to move from. So, you know, with a simple, you know, with sort of just a simple movement like spine stretch, that really created a lovely, strong place in which to flex the spine from. So that could be something to play with. Anything else? Yeah. I think, you know, and sometimes when you're in a move where there is a little bit of a holding, just, you know, to say, I want you to really quietly count, and just getting people to count, just going 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, as they're doing moves. So say if I'm doing shoulder bridge, and I'm saying, right, I've got 8 points on my spine, and I'm going to breathe in, and as I breathe out, I'm going to pick up my 8, my 7, my 6, and they've got to almost say 8, 7, 6, because in talking the numbers, you keep the exhalation going. So it's like that 8, 7, 6, 5, 4. And you can try that now. Just try that now because you're all muted. But imagine you're doing spine stretch and breathe in. And as you breathe out, start going 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And breathe in to return. And can you see your exhalation stayed the whole way through what you did? They don't have to, you know, talk loudly, you know, it can be a whisper, but what it does is it keeps the breath flowing for the whole move. So I hope that might help, to help that sort of area. Anything else? This always goes so quickly, this hour. I always think I'm going to be finished really quickly, and then I hope I don't waffle. Any other questions? So, okay, so is there anything we should be very careful with when working with EDS and like spinal rotation? Not really, I'd say, Laura. I think what you need to... The key is control. The key is that internal control that is giving you the stability in which to move from. So for me, because the majority of our moves combine strength, flexibility, stability, control. Do you know what I mean? That it's a combination, whatever move we choose. So what I would say is that your first focus is gaining stability. That is key to what you're doing. And that stability can either be found by using a prop to aid. It's creating that understanding, that discovery that the client has of this is where I'm strong, this is where I'm just hanging out. And I think that's the difference. It's the active internal strength that you want, not the superficial, these muscles are aching and shattered. It's the deep connection that is going to support them. So I wouldn't avoid any ranges, because I think especially for discs, we need movement, we need spinal movement, rotation, lateral flexion, flexion extension, everything. But it needs to be under control. So Felicity sort of said, you know, working in that very outer range they have, yes, I wouldn't let them hang out. It's got to be a conscious working with control. That doesn't mean to say that they don't work with the range they can get to. Does that make sense? You don't want to say to them, oh, this is the normal range. This is where I need to strengthen you. Because that's not functional for them. Because if I was to work a hypermobile in my range, they're going to stand up and walk out and not have stability in the range that they will naturally go into. Does that make sense? So I can strengthen them and give them stability in their little range that I think's normal. But as soon as they stand up and try and move, they're going to be in their normal, which is outside of my normal, and therefore it's not functional. So You need to move them in that area, but try and connect and give them that depth that they've got the strength and the resistance from. So Rosa's just put, her lady with EDS doesn't get any muscle ache or tiring, doesn't even feel any level of stretch, releases that stretch. Yeah, you see, if that's the case, Rose, I wouldn't stretch her. You know, I would actually just work on her breath, you know, because as you say, that's her thing. You know, it might be that, as I say, the range of symptoms can be so... No, I know you wouldn't do it, Rose. But her range of symptoms, the range of symptoms that manifest themselves are so different with each person that just think to yourself, what do they need? And so, Rose, is she more that... Is she anxious? Is she suffer with fatigue? Does she suffer sleeplessness? How does her EDS manifest itself?
She's actually managed it pretty amazingly well. She only got diagnosed with it after she'd had her second child.
Right.
Three, and she still just about manages to run. But with her, if she goes on all fours, she has to concentrate really hard to stop her thumbs dislocating. She can't decide to do side on side kick because side lying down, because her lower hip will come out of the sockets. Yeah, I mean, she was adamant she wanted to do it, so we've created this. Basically a setup with towels so that her hip, there's no pressure on the underside of her hip. It's just, she does get tired, but she's exactly the typical kind of adrenaline, go, 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 go,
yeah.
And then crashes in the evening. But she's absolutely amazing.
Wow.
I mean, she's feeling it incredibly, but it's very interesting with her. She was saying she had quite a bit of physiotherapy when they first diagnosed her, but they said to her, I'm afraid there's nothing we can do with your knees because you cannot, even under supervision and trying your hardest, you can't hold them in a position where they're not locked.
Yeah.
She can't do it. So she was effectively told not to bother.
Gosh, it sounds as though you're doing amazing work with her. And I think, you know, the stuff we've talked about, Rose, do you think it would help?
Yeah, definitely. I think, I'm really excited about seeing the cues with breathing only, because so often when she arrives, or if I get to her, depending on when the lesson's going to be, you can see she is just a bag of nerves and sort of nervous energy, because she's just like, I've got to go, I've got to keep going. Helping her kind of let go of that would probably get into the lesson a lot faster.
Yeah, and that's really interesting. So almost, you know, you can use Pilates as a vehicle to help her in that heightened state, and almost the exercises become the secondary bit. Do you know what I mean? That it's actually, you know, the calming influence on the nervous system. And as Cecilia said, it'd be great to hear how she responds to that, you know, just focusing on the breath and so on, because you're almost having to just manage her condition, which it sounds as though you're doing just an amazing job, Rose. And I think, do you use a lot of props with her then to create that closed kinetic chain and that sense of resistance?
I couldn't to start with. I suppose, yes, kind of limited to bands and towels. I was a bit limited on what I was able to start with, because she didn't really want to have lots of bits, and I wasn't able to take lots over to her for various reasons. So starting small, I've got a magic circle that she's agreed to use.
Yeah.
So we're going to do that. But the bands, a big game changer for her.
Yeah.
So she dreads it, but loves it.
Yeah, fascinating. I think that's incredible, Rose, what you're doing. But yeah, I'd love you to feed back to us, Rose, on the aspect of the breathing and, you know, allowing her to just calm a little bit and, you know, and just take the nervous system off that high alert, maybe in that way. Fascinating. Because as I say, this isn't something that's a specialism for me at all. You know, but I hope, as I say, you'll find most of what I've spoken about in this article. And I think that, yeah, we'll look at that. It was a while since I did that just breathing class. I might have to look at it myself. But I'll send that out to you, and hopefully it will give you cues that you can grow, you know, yourself and use. So any other questions on that? Anything else? Woo, Laura. So if stiffness can be caused by overworked connective tissue, should release, even though that's working her even harder in overworked areas. The EDS lady I've started to work with works well on reformer, loves a solid base, puts her shoes on, dislocates a toe and finger. Yeah. Yeah, no, don't say sorry at all. It's really hard because I think what we need to think of is allowing them... I think instead of us thinking about releasing their areas, which they are using for stability, what we need to do is find them, help them connect with and discover a stability, a more correct stability. Because the body needs stiffness, it needs tension. And, you know, what? Sometimes there's too much tension in one area and not enough tension. I always think of it like... even though I'm not musically trained whatsoever, but sort of like tuning a guitar strings is in the body what I sort of think of what we need to almost do is we're not trying to, you know, we're just trying to adjust within the body all these lines of tension that are holding me upright and holding me well. So what I'd almost think of doing is, because I think it is worrying when we try and mobilize areas that we might not be sure, you know, it's like if you often stretch somebody's hamstrings, they feel worse afterwards because actually that's what they use to stabilize. If we don't give them something else, they'll go back to that area and it seems to get even worse. So for me, I'd think more about, instead of worrying about that, I'd almost get them just to connect to that inner stability, and then that should in turn allow the area that's that holding pattern to let go because something else is more correctly holding them. That's the way my dream is anyway, that it works. So yeah, instead of, you know, it's almost like our scoliosis client when we sort of think we have to, you know, stretch that tightest, the bossy side. Actually, the bossy side is what's holding them up. So that's what I do. I'd focus on finding that connection, that deeper connection, their center, and then inner thigh, do you know what I mean, that sort of, those sort of areas to give them that strength. But I think what's hard for your client, Laura, is those finding that in their fingers and toes, you know, is just, you know, that's just something that obviously happens. And you know, with Pilates, there's only so much we can do. We can only look at, I think, the wider picture sometimes. And as you say, you know, you're doing a fantastic job getting her to feel more confident in movement, that it's, you know, it's going to be painful. Because as I've said, they have this heightened sense of the threat of pain. You know, so if we can help reduce that, then I think that is exactly what we need to do. Any other questions? I think, though, that hopefully has given you thoughts for somebody who's just, hopefully, you know, just that hypermobile with no other symptoms, but just lacks the stability, you know, and has given you some ideas for that as well. So I hope that's been okay. Have you got any ideas of what you want for next month's VNO? Anybody fancy anything? Let me know, because I will plan something else. But I hope, yes, and I hope I made sense there, because Cecilia, you're always good at picking up when I say something a bit odd, when I'm sometimes talking away waffling, so I hope that all made sense, and I hope that gave you some things. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to send you the class, I'm going to send you the link to the article that I pulled most of this from. I will try and get a hard copy of the magazine, so that we can, I can send that out to you. But obviously I think their website is sort of like you make a donation and then you become a member on there. So obviously that's what they would push for more, but I hope that's okay. Let me know what you'd like on the next month's VNO. I'd love to hear how you get on with your clients that have that. That have EDS and hypermobility syndrome, and have a lovely weekend. And yes, I'll see some of you, the instructors only. And thank you very much. So have a good weekend.